like to invite the following people to join me for lunch.
I think we should share an awesome blossom. What do you say? They are awesome.
Order!
Cheeseburger, please.
Get off, Napoleon. Make yourself a dang quesadilla.
And I'll have the number 8. That's a party platter. It serves 12 people. I know what I'm about, son.
This burrito is delicious, but it is filling.
Yeah, I'll have the linguine, red sauce on the side. If the sauce does not come on the side, I will send it back.
Can I take your order?
It's time for the Lunch Rush, the latest and greatest in sports news. Here's Brady Hall.
Are we just going to get to the point where we just remove betting completely for athletes and members of teams and such from professional sports? Phil Mickelson bet more than $1 billion on football, basketball, and baseball over the past 3 decades, and even allegedly attempted to place a $400,000 wager on Team USA in the 2012 Ryder Cup, in which he participated, according to an upcoming book by renowned professional gambler Billy Walters. I'm going to read that book. I got to check that book out. Excerpts of the book, Gambler, Secrets from a Life of Risk, were first reported Thursday by Fire Pit Collective and provide the most detailed look yet at Mickelson's sports gambling and his relationship with Walters, a Las Vegas businessman who is widely considered to be the most successful American bettor ever. Two very reliable sources gave Walters this information. He writes that from 2010 to 2014, Mickelson made 858 bets of 220,000 and 1,115 bets of 110,000. He estimates Mickelson endured losses of approximately $100 million while betting more than $1 billion over the past 3 decades. Angel, that is out of this world that he potentially bet over $1 billion over the years. A billion. I mean, we got receivers getting banned from the league for a year for betting a couple thousand. This guy bet, between other sports, over $1 billion. Do you think that we're going to get to the point where professional sports just flat out comes in and says, you cannot bet? It's a luxury and a privilege to be a professional athlete, and you make good money doing it. So we're going to say, no, you cannot bet on any sport.
Until it becomes evident that it's interfering with the game itself, then no. Because you're already seeing ESPN's trying to get their own sports book going.
Mm.
It's weird.
But again, if this were just like you bet on football, it'd be like, wow, $1 billion. Wow, you're not, that's not very wise. But it was reported that he tried to place some bets on the 2012 Ryder Cup as well. So gambling is taking over. It's what's driving sports. I saw that the Hall of Fame game last week, the ratings were through the roof, better than most regular season stuff that we've seen. And it's because people gambled on that game. I guarantee it. Guarantee you people placed bets on that game, Browns-Jets, and that's why it was so well viewed. Colts rookie quarterback Anthony Richardson is set to start the preseason opener. So we'll see him on Saturday going up against the Buffalo Bills. And he's battling it out with Gardner Minshew right now. And on my quarterback tiers, I have 33 quarterbacks listed. The reason is this is the one position I don't know who's going to be the starter. And it sounds like Richardson is going to get the first shot coming up on Saturday against the Buffalo Bills. The ACC trying to get Cal and Stanford in the mix, but they've hit some roadblocks at this stage. According to ESPN, they have hit significant roadblocks. There was no vote taken yesterday, but conversations about expansion among the league presidents are expected to continue as they wrestle with the best way to position the league in the future. Now I'm hearing, because Notre Dame is in the ACC in all of their other sports, correct?
Yes.
Just not football.
Football contract says if they are to pick a conference, it has to be the ACC.
So Notre Dame comes out and it sounds like they're pushing the ACC, like, no, yeah, bring in Cal, bring in Stanford, you should get those guys in. Is Notre Dame feeling pressure to join a conference right now from the NCAA, the college football playoffs. Do you feel like they're feeling pressure, so therefore they're trying to push the ACC to do something and get other teams in so they could use that as an excuse as to why they're not joining a conference when it comes to football?
Yeah, here's what the ACC commissioner said at their media days regarding Notre Dame. Have a lot of conversations, let me put it bluntly, with Notre Dame, and they've been very clear. They value their independence, and I think they feel strongly that will continue well into the future. If they ever have the desire of joining the conference, they know that we would welcome them with open arms. But I think, I can't speak for Jack right now and Pete in the future or Father John, but I think it's been a healthy relationship both ways for the ACC and Notre Dame. Their sports, other than football, I think have thrived in the ACC. I think they really enjoy the academic prowess, but they've been pretty clear about their desire to stay independent.
Another one of those wacky things about college football, or college sports in particular. You know, when you're explaining to a casual fan how college football does it, as opposed to how the NFL does it, this is one of those, oh, you have conferences and teams that are in conferences and they compete, and then the winner of that conference gets to go on to big bowl games or now potentially the playoffs. But there's also this Notre Dame team. They're not in a conference, so they don't have to win a conference. They just have to win every game for them to get in. This is one of those things where I think that, again, if you have a Roger Goodell takeover and the NCAA, CFP are just one entity, this kind of confusion and this kind of outlier with Notre Dame, this stuff shouldn't happen realistically when you look at what's going down in college sports. We've all just accepted it. This is how it is. But I think that going back to the overarching conversation of having some kind of seer take over for college football would be good. The Notre Dame thing is just another example of a wonky system.
I can see it like that. I can also see it as Notre Dame is betting on themselves, not literally betting on themselves, but your best opportunity to make the playoff is to be a good football team. Whether it's undefeated, 12-team playoff, you could probably get in with one loss, maybe two if you're in the top 20-ish teams. So for Notre Dame, it's, all right, we just have to focus on us and being good. We don't have to worry about if our conference has an automatic bid. We don't have to worry about divisions or seeding or any of that. If we're good, we're good, and we'll get in. If we're not good, we don't get in.
They'll never have a top seed, though, right?
No, but, I mean, they may be okay with being 12-0, and they're the 7th seed or the 6th seed or whichever.
Well, it might not matter because
I think it keeps the power in their hands.
Yeah, and it might not matter because hearing Greg Sankey talk, the SEC commissioner, we didn't get into this much. It sounds like they're going to sit down and look at the college football playoffs. Like they're going to, now that you have the four conferences gaining so much momentum and getting all these teams in, maybe they're all going to get to 20. It sounds like that might be the goal, or 18 at least. It just doesn't make sense to me that you wouldn't have the bulk of your playoff teams coming from those conferences. So that's where I think it hurts the Mountain West. And I don't know what that means for Notre Dame, but I tweeted this last night, Angel, that, you know, my fear right now is that college football playoff system, they do this. They say, okay, there's four power conferences. We got four champs. They're in. Now we're going to take the runners up of all of those conferences. So there's four more. Now you're at eight. And then you're going to take two wild cards from those four. And then the two other wild cards to fill 12 would be two champs from a G5, G6, whatever it is. That's what I think is going to happen. I really feel that way. And a lot of people push back on that. But wouldn't that make sense? If you want your best product in the playoffs, that's what you would do. And then you'd still throw a little bit of a bone out there to the G6, which is what I'm calling it now, until we figure it out with the Pac-4.
Include the group of, you know, the second tier of Division I schools, they're going to complain about it. There's going to be pushback from their fan bases and their conferences saying, what do you mean we're not in the playoff? What do you mean the American Conference isn't it? Conference USA, the Mountain West? That wouldn't be smart. You're cutting off 30-plus programs and fan bases.
I think
if they're confident enough in their 60-plus super conference league, then, you know, the money will tell them whether or not that'll work out. But if money is the biggest thing, I don't think you're going to cut off 30 markets, big or small.
So you don't think they'll change it? You think they'll just keep it?
I think they'll change it a little bit to adjust with the Power Four, But I still think they will try to keep the group of five conferences in there.
I hope you're right. I just feel like they're going to try to do something crazy.
Boise State gets moved down or whatever, and they go undefeated, and they're really good. The playoffs going to say, oh, man, we could have had Boise State in there.
Yeah. Eastside Chris, Brady, with all these conferences going crazy, what will happen with traditional bowl games like the Rose Bowl? Well, that's the question. We don't know what's going to happen with a lot of those, especially those Pac-12 bowl games. Because right now, as it sits today, August 10th, the Pac-4 is still a conference. It is still recognized as a conference with their bowl games and everything going into it. But that's a good question. What is going to happen with all these bowl games? You know, the Pac-12's bowl games. What Eastside Chris wants to know what's going on with the Rose Bowl.
The bowl games will still happen because they're still, you know, put in place by the sponsors of them. I don't think you may not see as many tie-in games like the Sugar Bowl or the Peach Bowl, the Orange Bowl, whichever, and those are going to be reserved for your playoff games. So the Rose Bowl will more than likely be a permanent playoff game. Whether or not it's Big Ten versus Big 12 or whoever, it's not going to be the granddaddy of them all Rose Bowl, but the game itself will still be played.
Do you think the playoff games are going to just be bowl games? Like their next biggest bowl games, they just make those all the playoff games?
Well, what they're doing is, so the first round team, top two teams, number one, number two, get a bye. Four or three through six, those are your conference champions, they host a playoff game at their home stadium.
Okay.
The second round games are all the New Year's Six. So you'll have four of the New Year's Six games, and then the semifinals will also be a New Year's Six bowl game.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I've thought that for years. Just name them, but you get to host a game. That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
If you get the one or two seed, you get a bye. You don't get to host a game, but you know you get a week off.
And this is what we're talking about with CSU. If you can just win your conference, if the way it sits right now, if your conference is strong, and you get in as a sixth seed because you're one of the champs, you could host a playoff game at Canvas Stadium.
Yeah, you might have to host Oklahoma, but you're playing them.
Sell out,
in
baby.
Fort Collins.
It might be 45-7, but you're in the dance. And then you get to use that next year. Hey, we lost Oklahoma 45-7 to the recruits, but we were in the dance. That stadium was full. There were scouts out at that game like you wouldn't believe. NFL scouts all over. I go to a random CSU game now, and I'll see a scout. Probably every time you go, you're going to see a scout. But you could use that as, dude, Oklahoma's coming to town? There's going to be 20 scouts in the press box.
Just because they're looking at Oklahoma kids.
Yeah, and then if you do something in this game, you know, maybe you've been lighting it up all year, Torrey Horton, but you're in the Mountain West Conference. You go in, hey, we lost 45-7, but you had 13 catches for a touchdown and 112 yards. Oh my gosh, we're writing this guy down. He could go in the third round. That is a recruiting tool. And this is what I've been saying for years. Yes, next year, it's going to be lopsided. That first round, all the teams that should win are probably going to win by whatever the spread is, take it. But the following years, 5 years down the road, do we see it spread out a little bit more because Billy could go be a backup tight end at Oklahoma, or he could go be Dallin Holker and start for CSU and host a playoff game at Canvas Stadium and get scouts' eyes on him?
Yeah, I think with a 12-team playoff, you're going to have opportunities to pull upsets, get attention on yourselves, and, you know, it's... I said this on the morning show earlier or last week. The standard of getting into the playoff is going to change. Right now, if you had three undefeated teams and one loss team, that's your playoff. This 12-team format, you're going to see the top two seeds probably undefeated or one loss.
Mm-hmm.
Three through six is going to be probably two loss teams, and you may see a three or four loss team in there with the group of six conferences.
Yeah, you may.
And with everyone's back being a power conference, everyone's going to beat each other up. That was the biggest thing in the Pac-12 since they've made the playoff twice since they started it, and because they were beating each other up in the regular season and they never had a champion left. Now, unfortunately, you would have an opportunity to have a two-loss champion and get in, and now it's gone.
I just hope they don't mess with this, because I think that right now the path is there. The path is there for CSU. And you still get a lot of power, because now it's obviously not going to be six conference champs, right? They'll probably just go
top four
five.
Conference champs.
You go top four, and then everything else is a wild card.
I would.
Well, you have to be
I
a
would
champ.
Do top.
Stay at top six, and it's four,
top four
of your
plus one.
So five.
Yeah.
So you still get a G5, whatever that it is, mm-hmm. in there. You just reduce it, and then you just increase the amount of wild cards
that
you
get. That doesn't
eliminate
the possibility for another group of five team if they're both in the top 20-ish teams.
You could do something like that, and it really doesn't change that much. It just, with only four Power 5, I'm going to keep calling it Power 5, with only four Power conferences in college, then you just reduce it because you don't have five anymore. So, interesting. My guys from Ram Nation, Joel Cantalamessa and Mike Rowe, sat down with Joe Parker. I want to play that, some of it back, because it was a great interview. And I have put out a request to get Joe on, so we'll see if that happens. But I thought it was interesting because at the tail end of the podcast, Joel asks about the tweet that I put out last week. And for those of you that are not familiar with this, I tweeted out last week that a source that I trust told me that CSU was taking more of a passive approach, was taking more of a hope they'll call. If they don't, we're digging into the Mountain West Conference approach. I even tweeted it's not necessarily a bad thing. So I want to play back Joe's response to that on the other side. Again, the folks from RamNation.com, Joel Cantalamessa, a very good friend of mine, and Mike Rowe, who we kind of know each other. 12:22 the time. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. On Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Start your day with Good Morning NoCo with Brian Gary and Tanner Schwint on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Ellison Hubbard, former CSU Ram, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Twenty-seven minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, welcome back into the whole show. We're gonna have Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, join us. This is the first time we've had him on since his horse voyage a couple of weeks ago. Is that right? Because the Rockies kept kicking us off the last two Wednesdays. So, is he a changed man? We're gonna find out.
Yeah, I'm interested about the Twitter handles on the jerseys for the Buffs players.
Yeah, I want to see what Mark thinks about
that. Interested. What? Why? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And the media and the people aren't there at practice.
Well, I think that some people go to practice because I'm seeing people tweet about Shadur looked great or whatever. So,
like, do you not know who these kids are? Like, they all announced where they were going back in March and April. Like, we know who these kids are. We got to go look them up on social media to find out who transferred. Well, you can go online to see you transfer portal list.
And you can't see the... You can see that if you get a close-up on them, but you can't
you
really see
them. You've
got to
be up close to really read the full, because it's not just a name. It's numbers and letters and uppercase, lowercase, symbols, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I gotta get Mark's thoughts on that, because that will be interesting to see. I tell you what, let's break now, because Mark and I can go rounds. So let's take a quick break here. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Sefa Lufau, former Colorado Buffaloes quarterback, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KSKA.
Minutes after 12 o'clock. No luck with Mark Johnson. We didn't get Mark. Okay, so we'll see if we can. Oh, we do. We're getting him. Oh, he's calling. He could be calling. This could be the big moment here. Very excited to find it out. Find out if we're going to get the Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, gearing up for what should be a great season. There he is, Mark Johnson, my friend. Always great to get you on the program. Thanks again for being with us. We got punted for Rockies yesterday, so we, you know.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I don't know why, but we did. It happens sometimes. It was a riveting game, though. Rockies lost. I know that's a shocker to a lot of people. But, Mark, my man, we're getting close. I haven't talked to you since your voyage. You haven't been on with us in a couple of weeks. Some things have happened you know, since then? Just a few things.
It's the world has changed a little bit. Yeah, you know, I was on that 100-mile horseback ride and had cell signal intermittently, and every once in a while I'd, you know, be able to peek someplace, ride the horse, and I'd catch a little cell signal. My phone would blow up, and so that's how I found out about the conference change. And I've said to many interviews I've done here the last couple of weeks, Brady, and, you know, initially the feeling is, well, it's like going back home, but then again, the home's been remodeled. It's a very different Big 12 than it was when we left, but I think it's a good move for Colorado. I understand 12 years ago why the Buffaloes made the move to the Pac-12 at that time. Things didn't work out there, and so it'll be good to get back in the Big 12. And, you know, it's, you know, I'll say this. You know, and I grew up in Big 10, Big 12 country. I was a Midwest guy growing up. And, you know, I've worked in the Big East. I've worked in the ACC. I've worked now in the Pac-12, obviously. Those Midwestern conferences, and I think you can say the same thing about the SEC, although I haven't worked there, a lot of college towns, and there's great love and passion for college sports that sometimes in the Pac-12, you know, in Los Angeles and the San Francisco Bay Area and Phoenix kind of gets lost a little bit. And so there's something about the Big 12 that just feels right with Colorado going back, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it does. And for the Buffs, I mean, when you hear that news, you're excited about it because we know, you and I have talked about it so much, even over the past few years, about the future of the Pac-12. So for the Buffs, it's great. Obviously, we know there's a lot still to be decided for the Pac-4 or whatever it is. But, I mean, Mark, that's done, right? There's no chance for them loading up any teams. I mean, we're just waiting for the Final Four to get out of there, right?
Well, you know, where do they go? Who do they go and get? I mean,
right.
that becomes the issue. If you want to remain a major conference, who do you go and get? There's just nobody left in that part of the country that, you know, and listen, you and I could have a two-hour conversation about what's going on in college athletics and how this is unfolding. And I've been saying, you know, Brady, this isn't the end. You know, there's an old line I heard years ago that said, if you believe that you're in a time of peace, that only means that everyone's reloading, right?
Mm.
And so I think what we've seen here is just another step in what ultimately, you know, becomes of college athletics. So right now it'll remain relatively stable here for a while. Now, I do think with what's going on with the Pac-4, if you will, they've got to figure something out. I was going to send it to you, dang it, I forgot to. Somebody put out a graphic today on Twitter, that had it was the Pac Mountain that it had, you know, those four teams in the Mountain West Conference and creating a new league. And, you know, there's some things about that that make a lot of sense, I think. But the lack of regionalization in college athletics is really quite disturbing on a number of fronts. And, you know, you saw what the football coach at Missouri said about it, and others have talked about, you know, what this means. And you got to think about beyond football and basketball, because, you know, with the soccer team and the golf team and the tennis team and, you know, what they're going to be dealing with in some of these conferences is really going to be overbearing from the standpoint of, you know, football and basketball are going to be chartering everywhere. A lot of these teams are going to be traveling commercial. It's going to be nightmare travel for some teams. And that's something that over the years when they've talked about caring about the student-athlete, let's even stop with that charade, because nobody's even thinking about the student-athlete at this point.
No, you're right. I mean, we've talked about how this, it's big business. I mean, college football is just gigantic monster business, and it's about what is going to increase the bottom line, the TV deals, all of that. Now, Mark, from your vantage point, I talk to a lot of Mountain West guys, and they all kind of say the same thing, like, yeah, the Mountain West will be great. They can, if they stay true together, stay strong together, maybe they can pick up an Oregon State or a Washington State. From your vantage point, how realistic is it that the Mountain West survives this whole thing and maybe does pick up an Oregon State or Washington State?
Well, I think there's a good chance that it survives this. And, you know, I would just say this. Number one, it's a quality league. But number two, what other options do, you know, Oregon State and Washington State have? I mean, they've got to find a home. And so since the Pac-12 is, you know, going by the wayside, it's just crumbled here in the last few weeks, you know, the next best option for them is going to be the Mountain West. It's a quality conference. It's an established conference. It's been around a long time. It's got a lot of history. It's got quality programs in it. That makes the most sense to me at this point in time. Now, what's going to happen on those given campuses, you know, there's going to have to be a swallowing of some pride and saying, okay, you're not going to be in what we term a Power 5 conference, and now to be a Power 4, I guess. And so you've got to understand that. But I think that the Mountain West is sitting on very solid footing right now. and those two schools potentially coming in, and we'll see what happens with Cal and Stanford. They're kind of unique. Stanford in and of itself is a unique creature, different than the other three we're talking about in the league. And so I think that's a good landing spot for them. And so I wouldn't be shocked if that happens. But, yeah, I think the Mountain West is in a solid position right now.
Yeah, I hope you're right because, again, just being a guy that follows both, you know, the Buffs and the Rams, I root for both of those or whichever conference those two teams are in. So we'll see what happens there. Mark, on the SEC commissioner's thoughts, he was talking a lot about, you know, there's sadness, there's all this. But a lot of the conversation, some of what I took from it, maybe the underlying part of it, was the fact that maybe college football playoffs needs to revisit how they're going to structure the playoffs and all of that. And then my brain started taking me down this conversation you and I've had of college football as a whole. I mean, do we need to get to a point where the NCAA, the college football playoffs, there's just one Roger Goodell type person that's overseeing all of it, where there's more control, there's no independence, all of that. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I've told you before, I think that's where it's going. And that's what I mean about, you know, we're in a pause right now, but ultimately that's where it goes. And I've been, you know this, I've been preaching this for a long time, and early on when I started saying it, I was kind of the lone voice in the wilderness, and people told me I was nuts, but I still think this ultimately goes to where, you know, some number, you pick the number, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 programs separates from the NCAA and goes and creates their own organization. And then what happens is you've got a unionization of players, and there's revenue sharing with the student athletes, and they have, you know, some sort of graduated pay scale, just like they do in other professional sports, and that's what it becomes. And, you know, when that does happen, and I've said this many times, it's going to destroy particularly women's athletics, but really college athletics overall from that group on down will be destroyed. And you know, some will survive in some sort of non-scholarship type situation. Others are just going to drop college athletics, and people are going to lose opportunity. Guys like me that play Division II college basketball won't have an opportunity because they won't have programs to fund, you know, coming from the NCAA basketball tournament where the money, you know, bulk of the money comes from. So this whole thing is it's crazy, and I think what it does ultimately, it destroys what makes college basketball and college football unique. When it becomes that league, whatever it looks like, when we get there, how do you differentiate that from the NFL? And then if it is like the NFL, why am I going to take half the NFL when I can have all of the NFL? I mean, there are so many aspects about this that have just been driving me crazy now for two decades as we saw this coming down the road. And every time I raised a red flag and said, hey, you got to be careful about, you know, paying players and how this is going to work. And then I was told, oh, you don't understand it. You're hating on these kids. Deserve this. Well, guess what? When it's all said and done, Brady, some are going to make some money, and it's going to be real good for them. And a lot of people are going to lose out on opportunity and the experience of playing college athletics and getting a college education. And so more people will be ultimately hurt by this than will gain from it. And that's the part that's going to be very disappointing.
Well, and don't you think there's more of an urgency now more than ever for teams to join a big conference for the TV money? Because now, and again, this is different for some schools, but now the bigger schools are sharing some of their money that they would typically get from advertisers or whatever, because those guys are now putting it into an NIL pot and going to some of those players where maybe they're not getting as much as they used to. So the urgency to go get more money where you can, when you can, seems to be picking up.
Well, be careful there. Now technically, the university can't be doling out NIL money.
True. What I'm talking about, though, is like an advertiser saying, okay, well, I could do $2,000 a month with you, or I could do $1,000 a month with you, and I'm actually going to put $1,000 in to the NIL collective with these guys. So a Ford company, for example. So aren't we seeing that on the national scale?
Well, there is some that you just see the news the last couple of days, NIL collective at Texas A&M. They were shutting that thing down because of all kinds of legal activity. And so, you know, this whole thing has been such a mess, and I've used that term, it's the Wild West, over the, you know, last few years when this thing has cranked up. There is no uniformity. Every state legislature has passed individual state laws, so it's a little bit different in Colorado than it is a little bit different in, you know, Texas, than it is a little bit different in North Carolina or wherever else. I mean, and so right now, I don't know how you run an organization that way. You have different rules for different teams and different conferences, and it's just such a mess out there right now. And the NCAA has dropped the ball on this. You know, Jeremy Bloom was at practice today up in Boulder. I'm just leaving Boulder right now. And I started thinking about when I got here in 2004, 19 years ago, he was dealing with the NCAA with the whole, you know, issue of him getting endorsement deals because he was an Olympic athlete and how they kicked him out of college football. And they had an opportunity in 2003, 2004 to deal with this and start to put together some sort of parameters on how you move forward within this concept of compensating student athletes. And they just ignored it and kept kicking the can down the road. And now you've opened up this just mess in college sports that we're dealing with, and nobody can put the toothpaste back in the tube at this point in time. It's out. I don't know what they do with it. And the only thing I think that probably ultimately fixes it, and I say fix, basically puts a kind of a parameters around it, is if they do break off and create their own organization, then they can put in place, here's exactly how we're going to handle this, like the NFL or Major League Baseball or NBA does. Then they can get a handle on it. At this point, I'm not sure how you rein this thing in. I think it's almost impossible.
And I agree with you, too. I think that that's probably where we're headed. My brain, I'm not smart enough to understand how that even works, how you break off from the NCAA and use, you know, but I see that happening, you know, where these guys are essentially, we're just paying them to play college football. That could be the road we're headed to pretty soon.
Yeah, and you know, when I say it's going to really damage women's athletics, what I mean by that, if some of your listeners don't quite understand, if they break off and they become independent and there's no public funds that are funding these athletic departments, and they almost become these unique, you know, autonomous agencies, if you will, well, then Title IX doesn't apply to them in that regard. You know, you don't have to be, you know, careful about you know, things like Title IX in the National Football League, for instance, because it's a private organization. And so I think that ultimately is what this thing eventually becomes, and it's going to really damage, like I went through, lower levels of college athletics and women's athletics, and you know, a bunch of people are going to be making a bunch of money, but a lot are going to be losing those opportunities. So yeah, that's going to be interesting when it happens. But what will happen? The NCAA just go away? They'll basically disband it. And everyone's going to take off, and then we're really going to see chaos.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, joining me. Mark, do you foresee a Buffs upset over TCU? Is your brain prepared for that just yet? I mean, are we thinking the Buffs can do it?
Well, holy cow, man. Now, you're asking me, you want to talk about putting the cart ahead of a horse. I'm out of practice just trying to figure out who number 13 is and number 27. And I'm out there with my roster watching and doing the play-by-play in my head. And still get my head around. I haven't seen the Buffs fully scrimmage yet.
Mm.
And so I'll tell you this. Here's what I'll say about Colorado right now. They got a whole lot of athletes, man. I mean, they really do. This is going to be, I think, the fastest team that I have seen in this will be my 20th season coming up here doing the Buffs. They've got more speed than I've ever seen. Shedeur Sanders is a big-time quarterback. That I'm convinced of at this point. Travis Hunter is a freak of an athlete. It doesn't take an NFL genius to step out there in the field and go, number 12 is different than everybody else out here. That cat is unique in and of himself. So there's some reasons to really be excited about what Colorado is going to do this season. I'm certainly optimistic and anticipating their first ball game, but you know, what is the 10th? That game's on September 2nd. I'm a long way from fully getting an understanding what the Buffs are going to look like by then.
So on that side, maybe we don't know these answers yet, but Travis Hunter, so excited to see him in action. Where will he primarily be, Mark? I mean, we don't see a lot of guys like this. Is he going to be a corner? Is he going to be a wide receiver? A little bit of both or just a little bit of one? What are you thinking or hearing at this point?
The answer is yes. that's the answer. You know, I did an interview with Travis just a few days ago here, and I said, you know, what should I call you? Should I call you a corner? Should I call you? He said, athlete.
Mm.
And that's what he is. I mean, he really is. You know, it wasn't that long ago we had LaVisca Chenault at CU, and you could walk out on a practice field and stand there for about 5 minutes. I was saying to a guy out there today, I said, you know, you could take a Martian in here and stand him out here in about 5 minutes, knowing nothing about football, he'd look and say, that guy over there is different. And that's what I say. You know, we said that about LaVisca, who is, you know, a high-level NFL draft pick and a great NFL player, great NFL talent. Travis Hunter's that way. He moves different. He looks different. And Travis was telling me, I just said to him, I said, you don't want to come off the field, do you? And he said, no, I want to play both sides of the ball. I want to play every snap. And so that's apparently the mentality he's got. Now, when you're old and tired like I am, there's no way you could play every snap. But a young guy like that, he's, what, 19 years old? He's got all kinds of energy. He's indestructible in his mind. And he'll play a lot of snaps on both sides of the ball. And he can be an all-conference level guy on both sides of the ball. That's how gifted he is.
Well, I mean, you're hearing Heisman talk and all that stuff surrounding this guy. So I'm pumped. I'm excited to see him in action and excited to hear you back on the call, my friend Mark. Always appreciate your time, and we'll look to catch up with you next week.
I look forward to it. See you.
Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes. There's no way he can play both ways all game, right? You don't risk that either, because the percentage, the chance of injury now is through the roof. If he's out on the field all game, I mean, I don't know. 12:50 the time. Let's wrap up. We got another hour coming up. Joel Cantalamessa is going to join me from RamNation.com. He interviewed CSU Athletic Director Joe Parker yesterday in a podcast with his partner Mike Rowe with Ram Nation. And I want to play back some of that, and then we'll bring Joel on to get his thoughts. All that and more coming up next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy, a Northern Colorado's voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hear Preps Talk and Coach Speak with Coach Bruce Dick, the fourth winningest coach in Colorado boys basketball history. Weekdays from 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Ellison Hubbard, former CSU Ram, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The time. Welcome back into the whole show, powered by PDC Energy. We have preseason football going on tonight, so I'm eager to take a glance at that. And then Broncos in action tomorrow. And briefly, we spoke about it, but the Broncos depth chart came out today or yesterday. It's a preseason depth chart. There's still a lot of things to be decided, but initially, we kind of have an idea what this team looks like.
Who's QB1?
It would be Russell Wilson.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's a curious move.
There's no or there. It's just Russ.
Was that really, like, mind-shattering to NFL people, like, seeing or on a depth
chart? Adam Schefter tweeted it out. I've never seen this before. I'm like, you've never seen? Have you ever looked at a college football depth chart?
A depth chart in general?
I've seen or. Yeah, I'm sure
it's like
I've
a part of
the
key at the bottom of the paper. Like, or means or.
Well, in this case, the one I got is instead of an or, it's just a slash in between.
Could mean something else.
I couldn't believe Schefter tweeted that out. Like, never seen that before. I'm like, you surely have seen a college football
depth chart. We
talked about
Schefter is, you know, on his own for a lot, and then the NFL has to pay the coaches and people to text him.
So maybe he doesn't get a lot of. He's like, not digging as much as he says he is.
He doesn't do a lot of his own research. It's all fed to him.
I couldn't. Like, it's not that mind-blowing.
A depth chart? What's an or?
You don't know who you're starting until the day of.
I thought you used that to push the boat downstream.
Yeah, I was like, what? The tight end position, though, for the Broncos, that's the interesting one because much has been made of Greg Dulcich, who's going into his second year. And Sean Payton has spoken very highly of Dulcich, but he is not listed as the starting tight end. It's Adam Trautman at the starting spot, then Greg Dulcich, then Chris Mannertz, then Nate Adkins. So a little bit of a shocker there, I guess.
What's the wide receiver lineup look like?
So we're looking at Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy. So those will be your starters there. And then the backups, they're Marvin Mims Jr., the rookie, and then Brandon Johnson, who had a slight injury scare the other day. But it seems like he's going to be okay. So those are your four. Then Kendall Hinton is behind Marvin Mims, and Marquez Calladay is going to be the guy. Another one of those veteran guys that Peyton's familiar with. So he'll be in the mix too.
So definitely wide receiver three battle.
Yeah. At this stage, a big battle for that because of the situation with KJ Hamler and Tim Patrick. Number three battle is up. The running back depth chart is Javonte Williams, no surprise there. Samaje Perine, who I think is, from all reports, indicating that he's having a very good camp. And then Tyler Batty will be there, Tony Jones Jr. at number four there. So no big shocks, except for maybe the safety position too. Kareem Jackson and Caden Stearns, those two are fighting for a position, for a starting position. So that's a key battle to watch out for. That and that, the tight end position, and then wide receiver number three. Those are the big ones to watch out for coming up tomorrow night. Can't wait. I'm excited for it. It's going to be a blast. Okay, Joel Cantalamessa is going to join me in the 1 o'clock hour. I want to play back some of his podcast with Joe Parker, the Colorado State Rams athletic director, get his thoughts on the conversation and the direction CSU will ultimately go. All that and more coming up next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKF.